Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
We're live.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by...
Me. I'm Vincent.
Vincent. Okay.
What's up, guys?
we got a shocking story for you this week. Not as shocking as many of our other stories, actually, but it's kind of a quirky, weird tale. So, you know, I thought we should tell you guys about it. It's a little offbeat. But before we get into that, I wanted to just let everybody know that Vincent and I, this weekend, November 20th and 21st, are going to be at CooperCon in Vancouver, Washington. If anybody wants to come and join us. Do a web search on KubernetesCon. You'll find the location. You can buy tickets there. There are probably still some tickets available. I don't know. I have no idea how good or bad it's going to be. Probably be fun and interesting, but we're going to go there anyway. And by the way, but of course, this is an important date for Cooper because this is the 50th anniversary.
Just
a week or two of the hijacking. So yeah, very important anniversary, I think. I mean, I personally, you know, think that there is at least a small possibility that on that 50th anniversary, there will be a revelation. Maybe Cooper's lawyer will come forth with a letter. You know,
his lawyer will come forward with his lawyer.
Yeah, his lawyer. I know. The Freudian slip, man. Freudian slip, man. Pretty soon we're all going to be lawyers.
Two kinds of people in the world, lawyers and D.B. Coopers.
And who, by the way, probably was a lawyer, or maybe he is. He might still be alive. You know, I mean, that's probably one of the things that will be discussed at CooperCon. And there will be some interesting people there, including Tom Kay. If you're a Cooperologist, you've heard of Tom Kay. And he'll be there, and a few other interesting characters as well. So, if you can be there, if you want to attend, tickets are only like $20. So, hey, and anyway, back to Cooper. I think that it is indeed possible that on the 50th anniversary, that his lawyer will come forth with a letter explaining who Cooper was and why he did it. You know, because, you know, it is possible. And, wow, that would be kind of cool. Although at the same time, it'd be kind of a letdown. You know what I mean? It's like,
inevitably, you know, if this case is ever solved, it will be a letdown. It'll be some guy be like, yeah, I needed some money, so I did the thing on the plane.
Yeah. Or it might be actually a bigger thing than that. I've got many theories about who he was and why he did it. Some of them are more dramatic than others. But, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, probably the real story will just be, you know, there was a bet with some friends. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, our plane seemed like a good idea.
I don't know. I was actually mentally ill and off my meds. And so I just thought it'd be cool. But, you know. Anyway, let's enough about that.
Speaking of mentally ill,
crazy. Yeah.
Some kind of professional intervention.
Yeah, let's talk about the subject of this week's shocking details. And it is kind of a shocking. Yeah, the tale of This was Edward Gibbons Wakefield. He was one of the founding fathers of Australia, actually the colony of South Australia, and also New Zealand. In fact, he was a member of Parliament, an MP in New Zealand for a while. Served also as an MP briefly in the Canadian Parliament. He was very involved in British colonial affairs his political.
Yeah, he was just like going around the globe serving in different governments.
Yeah. But most importantly in New Zealand. But his political career was so distinguished that he actually got a 7-column write up in the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography.
What's that?
Yeah. What is that? It's a compendium of biographies of significant individuals who shaped British history. And over 60,000 biographies are in there. And I have not yet read it. I doubt that I ever will, actually. I might read snippets. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds like a Door stopper.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Edward Gibbon Wakefield was an important guy, really.
But before he became an influential and important politician, there was an earlier time of innocence when he advanced his cause by marrying into a bunch of rich families.
Yeah, well, at least marriage. One. At least one. The other one, he tried real hard.
He was working on it. Yeah, you're right. He only really got away with it once. And one of these marriages, it kind of looked like a kidnapping plot, actually. There was some controversy after brief stint in prison was involved. Edward Gibbon Wakefield was born in London in 1796, and his family was well off, but maybe not as filthy rich as old Edward Gibbon, E.G., is that what we're going to call him? As E.G. would have liked.
Yeah.
He was educated in London and in Edinburgh. In his late teens, he got a gig as a king's messenger carrying diplomatic mail all across Europe.
Whoa. That'd be a cool job. That'd be cool. Yeah, you get paid to travel all over Europe.
Do they still have that? Could I apply?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I probably almost never lose things. I think that would make me an ideal candidate.
I've never seen you lose anything, actually, personally. So, yeah, right? So I'll be a job reference for you. So the one thing about it, though, is that he was doing this during the Napoleonic Wars. So there might have been a little bit of danger involved. I'm not sure. Okay. Probably. Right, yeah. But on the other hand, he would have had some great war stories if he didn't get killed, and obviously he didn't. And he probably would have an opportunity to just make up some cool war stories too, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Who knows what was going on?
Exactly.
Nearly shot with bullets.
Yes.
I was in the French countries.
Yes. In that country over there, they tried to stab me. And okay. There you go. You get the idea. There I was. Yeah.
So in 1816, back from his adventures on the continent, E.G. meets up with Eliza Susan Paddle, who was wealthy but orphaned and under legal guardianship because she was like 17. And Eliza fell in love with E.G., who was handsome and debonair. And hey, he was a former king's messenger.
Yeah, that was probably the equivalent of James Bond or something, you know, back in those days.
Yeah, probably, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty hardcore. It's pretty dope. Mm-hmm. So Eliza's guardians did not approve of the match. Maybe they kind of figured out E.G. was a gold digger.
Yeah.
And Edward and Eliza did what youngsters like to do, and they eloped, and they were married in Edinburgh.
Mm. So Eliza's guardians were outraged by this, but it was, unfortunately, a done deal. So they decided to make the best of the situation, and they gave Edward a marriage settlement of £70,000. Kind of like, I guess, the equivalent of a dowry or something. But that's a lot of money. I mean, that's the equivalent of around $7 million today. And Eliza was also apparently likely to inherit more money when she turned 21. So, jackpot for Edward G, if indeed he was a gold digger. And I'm not sure in this case if he was, but, pay attention to the rest of the story and you can decide for yourself if he was. Yeah.
E.G. began to pursue his career, which was secretarial duties at the British embassies in Genoa and in Paris.
Oh, nice. With
Eliza was working out well enough and they had two kids, but in 1820, Eliza died 4 days after giving birth to their second child.
Ouch. That's really sad. A lot of women died in those days from childbirth.
Ugh. Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah.
So Edward's, he's kind of at loose ends marriage-wise. He was wealthy and respectable, at least so far. And he probably should have had no trouble finding a wife, but it appears that vast wealth was a major requirement, along with the usual stuff like having a smoking hot body and a Instagrammable face and maybe some personality too.
Well, that's optional, but the wealth and the hot pot in the face. Yeah, that's key. But, but it took him 6 years to find a suitable mate. This turned out to be Miss Ellen Turner of Pottshrigley, Cheshire. Reportedly a fine woman. And best of all, her family was filthy rich, one of the richest families in England at the time. So it was true love, as you can imagine. Edward G. apparently got this information from his stepmother, Frances Wakefield. Who knows? This next thing, what transpires next might have actually been her idea even. I don't know. Anyway, when he made up his mind to marry young Ellen Turner, he had never actually met her. And oh, by the way, she was 15 years old.
Oh, and they did that back then, though.
Yeah, but still, it's a little weird that, you know, it's like, oh, she will be my wife. Have you met her? No. That's a little stalkery, dude.
Making money ain't easy. So Ellen Turner went to a boarding school, which is a weird thing to say about your, you know, wife in Liverpool. That's where she was living. And one day in March 1826, an expensive looking carriage turned up at the school and a well-dressed rich man's servant got out and delivered a note to the headmistress.
Ooh.
It was from John Ainsworth, MD, and it said that Ellen Turner's mother had had a sudden and dangerous attack of paralysis.
Ooh, that sounds bad.
It's like a stroke?
I don't know, man. It's whatever it is. Or Bell's palsy, maybe, if you're lucky.
So yeah. Ellen needed to return home immediately. But the note also said Miss Turner did not want her daughter to be told about the condition ahead of time, since that would cause needless anxiety. Yeah. Thoughtful.
That sounds plausible, I guess. I mean, it's not like the carriage that they sent to fetch Ellen was a white van, which would have been kind of a tell, right? That would set off alarm bells. So those were more trusting times, and people weren't used to this idea that there's always some scammer out there looking to kidnap a young girl and do heinous things to her, you know, right?
Oh, I mean, I guess.
I guess, at least. I don't know. But still, I mean, the con went off because the guy, the servant who delivered the note seemed to be very well-spoken and respectable and well-dressed. Right. The carriage he arrived in was expensive, and
I could totally see this working.
Looked like it belonged to a rich dude. There was a little hitch because Ellen did not recognize this servant, and I'm not sure exactly what the story was there. It'd be something like, "Oh yeah, the regular guy's off for the weekend," so or something lame like that. But yeah. Anyway, they eventually everybody was convinced, and Ellen was sent off to go see her ailing mother. And by the way, the servant was Edward G's servant, Edward Thévenot, I believe is how it's pronounced. I think he was French. He was his valet. And by the way, he would actually be charged with a crime later on for this. But anyway, the upshot of the whole thing is that Ellen was on her way home in a nice carriage.
Mm-hmm.
But when the carriage reached the town of Manchester, it stopped at an inn, the Hotel Albion. Ellen was taken to a private room. And the valet, Edward Thévenot, told her that her dad would be coming by the room shortly to take her home.
And soon there was a knock at the door, but it wasn't her dad.
Uh-oh.
It was Edward Wakefield.
Oh, Edward G. Yeah. Future member of Parliament. Yeah. Hey.
He introduced himself, saying that her dad wasn't able to come and that he'd been asked to take her to her parents. He explained that the note about her mother's illness was just a cover story. The truth was that her father's business was failing and his fortunes had taken such a serious downturn that she would be forced to leave her school. And well, that actually wasn't the truth either.
Now, if that were true, then Edward G. would not have been interested in her, huh?
That's a good point. Right. That's a good point. The reason her dad wasn't there in Manchester to meet Ellen was that he was being pursued by his creditors and couldn't show his face in town. He was hiding in good old Halifax.
Oh, of course, that's where I would go. But Ellen, of course, was very, very upset to hear this news. But she didn't see any reason to doubt that it was true because Edward seemed like a very well-dressed, very thoughtful, gentlemanly dude, very sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. So she didn't really doubt him. So anyway, he said, he told her they needed to go to Halifax. And so he and Ellen and set off for Halifax where she could be reunited with her dad. But it turns out that Mr. William Turner, her dad, was not in Halifax. But that's okay, said Edward G., because he suspected that her dad was actually in the town of Kendal. Yeah.
Why?
And so I'm not sure. But I don't have every, a documentation of every word that was spoken. I assume he had a good excuse for knowing this. Maybe William Turner had communicated to him that he'd be in Halifax. If not in Halifax, then Kendal. If not in Kendal, then somewhere else, et cetera, you know? And so I'm sure he was a smooth talker. The guy had the gift of gab, you know? And that's why he probably did well in politics. A certain amount of shamelessness and smoothness, you know, will get you a long ways. Yeah.
How is poor Lady Ellen doing with this? How's Ellen holding up? Is she starting to freak out or is she just like, whatever?
I think she was like upset to hear about all this stuff. But as far as like, was she getting freaked out by Edward G. and suspecting that he was like, you know, sketchy? I don't think that is set in quite yet. Not quite yet.
All right.
But so anyway, they go to the town of Kendal, and he's, of course, dad is not there either. But at least in Kendal, he had left a letter for Edward G. that told them to meet him in the town of Carlisle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. And so they go get in the carriage, head up to the town of Carlisle. And during the journey, Edward G. gives Ellen the sad details of her father's desperate straits. Mr. Turner was, quote, almost ruined, unquote. Apparently, Wakefield's uncle had loaned her dad £60,000, but even that had failed to keep his business afloat. But and also, unfortunately, because of this loan, the Wakefield uncle would soon come into title for the Turner family estate, and Ellen's family would be booted out. And so, yeah, now I'm sure Ellen was alarmed to hear all this stuff, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great for her.
No, not at all.
So Eddie G. had spoken with William Turner's solicitor, who told him that there was only one hope for the Turner family. Edward Wakefield and Ellen must marry post-haste. Yeah, they got to tie the knot. Then the property would be hers. And of course, then, of course, by proxy, her husband's.
Oh, yeah.
Not, I don't think you do either, right? Like, no. I don't totally understand all the legal reasoning here.
I don't quite get it either, though. Ellen, of course, was only 15 years old. But, but if the estate was collateral on a loan, then Ellen getting married doesn't change that. He doesn't have clear title to it. And so he can't just pass it to somebody. It doesn't, I mean, that would be cool, actually, if you could go load up your house with second, third, and fourth mortgages and then just give it to somebody else and all that stuff is wiped out. That'd be totally awesome.
That'd be a heck of a tool. Yeah, you could really.
I mean, I would love it.
Cash out of the banks. But yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't understand this. But so just going forward, poor Ellen Turner had actually lived a pretty sheltered life. And she was a trusting girl. She had no reason to doubt Edward's word, since he seemed so sure of himself and so sympathetic to her and her family. She said she'd do nothing until she saw her father, which, I mean,
good girl.
Minimum. Yeah, right.
Yeah, verify,
right?
I mean, and there was a class thing here. I mean, Edward G. was, you know, he was wealthy and had well-educated and was a gentleman. And certainly she never would have for a second entertained any thought of believing some dude who was dressed in humble bricklayer's clothes.
No.
But a gentleman, on the other hand, you know, they're still traveling around in the carriage. So they got to Carlisle, the town of Carlisle, and they stop in at an inn.
Just real quick, how long have they been pinging around like this? I mean, yeah. It's got to be days and days. Right? My British geography isn't amazing, but.
Yeah, no, we're talking probably, probably talking a couple of days of travel here.
At least.
Yeah, and because, horse and carriage, I mean, it doesn't go that fast.
That's what I'm thinking,
You know, they're on a magical mystery tour here, but they finally reach the town of Carlisle, but they stop in at an inn, and Edward goes inside, left Ellen to wait in the carriage. And he comes back outside with another man who happened to be his brother William, impersonating somebody who knew her dad. So, nice. And so William tells Ellen that he had spoken to her dad and he'd agreed to the marriage. And he would have told her this in person, but he was hiding from the law and hoped to escape over the border into Scotland soon.
Play this out for me. I'm so confused about this. I've read this twice now. William shows up. So who's he impersonating?
You know, I don't know if he claimed to be like a lawyer, an employee, a servant, or exactly what.
But it wouldn't be someone that Ellen knew. That's the trick, right?
No.
I see. So he's like, oh, I know your dad, but you don't know me.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Hey, you know, I work with your dad, or I'm a solicitor or something. I don't know exactly who, exactly how he, you know, but, you know, he was like his brother. He was a smooth talker, I think. And so she apparently believed him, because she felt at this point that she had no other choice. I mean, her dad is on the run and, you know, and trying to sneak into Scotland. So she consents to the marriage. And so they head north. From there, they go to Scotland, which apparently the marriage laws are kind of looser in Scotland, or at least they were back then.
And so they
wind up in a little town called Gretna Green, and where they were married. And according to one account, quote, in the presence of a drunken blacksmith, the landlord of a public house, and a postboy, unquote.
That sounds like my wedding.
Another telling of this tale says that it was actually the blacksmith who performed the ceremony. So I guess they really do have loose wedding laws up in Scotland.
Yeah. So after the ceremony, Ellen asked if they would return to Carlisle and her father. And of course not. Wakefield told her Mr. Turner had skipped town and was probably headed for London. So now they're heading south.
And
you know, we're making some jokes here, and times were different back then. Mores were different. People lived differently. But this is a grown man who's now cajoled into marrying and has abducted this 15-year-old girl.
I know, 30-year-old guy and a 15-year-old girl. It's a little creepy.
Messed up, man. Yeah, I think more than that. I don't think she was some, you know, like London street urchin who'd seen everything. I think she was pretty innocent. So this is actually, just before I giggle too much at the wackiness of this story, this is pretty messed up.
Yeah, it is. And I think the whole idea here was that Edward G. was thinking that if he could trick her into the marriage and everything, and then it would be a fait accompli, and then he'd just basically tell the family, hey, I married your daughter, and so, hey, I'm your son-in-law. You better get used to the idea, and by the way, I'd like a big dowry. You know, like a big honking huge dowry. And
I don't know. Yeah, maybe to preserve their dignity or whatever. But I guess I'm not really familiar with 1820s British law, which after a month in October, I really should be.
I know. But yeah,
I just don't think that's legal. I mean, they had to have a crime called kidnapping on the books back then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe he felt that if.
I was thinking that, and then I was also thinking maybe he's thinking the family would go along with it to avoid a scandal.
Well, that too, probably. That was a strategy, in case you're wondering what the hell he was thinking. I mean, he did actually have a sort of rational plan going here, even if it was a little sociopathic. I mean,
right? It's pretty nasty. Anyway, great. So these two, child kidnapper is now headed south.
William goes ahead.
Yeah, so his brother.
Yeah.
Ostensibly to tell William Turner to wait in London for Ellen. Mm. This is getting complicated. But what he really did was bribe an employee at the Blake Hotel to pretend that he'd seen William Turner.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it anyway. Right.
This is weird.
And then 2 days later, Edward G. Wakefield and Ellen arrived in London. And the next morning, Wakefield pretended to ask after his brother and Mr. Turner of this bribed, and it was, of course, the bribed employee that he asked. And they were told in Ellen's presence that William had headed to France and were now lying low in Calais. So time for them to leave England and go to Calais, France, right?
Ah, oh, man, this is like Buffalo 66.
I know.
So meanwhile, Miss Dalby, the headmistress at Ellen's school, was becoming increasingly worried about not hearing any news from Ellen. Mm. So finally, 5 days later.
This is after 5 days after Ellen had been taken from the school.
Right. So, right. I mean, these guys have been, I mean, they've basically crossed the entire mainland of, you know, England and Scotland.
Yeah.
So 5 days later, she goes up to the Turner estate, and Ellen's parents were really not in the best of moods. Mm. See, just before the London papers had announced Ellen's marriage to one Edward Gibbon Wakefield.
Gave us a surprise to them, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. also, Mrs. Dalby was surprised to see that Mr. Turner was.
Oh, Mrs.
Turner, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just leave it in. I was surprised to see that Mrs. Turner was in good health and not sick and really not very paralyzed at all.
Hmm.
Wow. A little bit. And no one in the Turner family had ever heard of Dr. John Ainsworth or his servant.
Oh, wow. You mean they lied to me? Oh, my God.
This is not looking great for you, Miss Dalby.
I know.
But I don't know how to say this to you.
Yeah, I don't know if Ellen went back to that school or not after this.
I would say enrollment probably took a hit after this incident.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly.
Well, one bright little ray of sunshine here is that one of the newspapers had helpfully provided the information that the newlywed couple were now honeymooning in Paris. So William Turner, that's again Ellen's dad, along with two of his brothers, probably two angry brothers, also the family solicitor and a police officer, started for France in hot pursuit. And they did find them. One of Ellen's uncles, I guess they must have split up and to look around, but one of Ellen's uncles found Edward G. and Ellen staying at a hotel in Calais. And went by for a little visit. Mm. So Edward G. was polite to his visitors, but he would not allow them to see Ellen. Because after all, you know, she was his wife. So he was in charge of her, right? Yeah.
This is another thing, Joe. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to like grind our podcast to a halt. Maybe you have an explanation for maybe you don't. Maybe there is a good explanation for that. Maybe there isn't. But I'm picturing a hotel room, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, knock, knock, it's Uncle Jimmy or whatever.
Yeah.
I would really like to see my niece, who appears to have been, you know,
kidnapped
from her boarding school. You know, she's like, what, like on the sitting on the bed or the sofa or something. And there's her new husband at the door being like, sorry, bro, she's my wife. I get to make that call now. Like, what must have been going through Ellen's mind? Did she hear any of
this? Well, I'm not sure what was going on with that. If they were staying in I assumed that they were staying in a suite. Because let's not forget. I mean, Edward G. actually had money. I mean, he was given a cash settlement of like $7 million equivalent. when he married Eliza. So he, you know, they were probably staying in a nice place. It probably was a suite of rooms, and she was in another room. But yeah, you'd think she would still overhear the controversy going on in the other room, right?
Yeah, you'd still think you'd have some idea. I don't know how big this suite they were staying in would be.
The other thing is maybe these people were too gentlemanly. I would think that if it was like my niece and who'd been abducted, I'd be heading to France with a revolver and maybe a truncheon, you know? So when he says something like, well, she is my wife and you shan't see her, I'd be like, bap, 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 you know?
Well, that's kind of what I was saying.
There was no violence here. Yeah, there should have been.
Well, that's also what baffles me about it, right? Like, if they are upset enough about this thing to travel to another country, I mean, I'm assuming these men had, you know, stuff to do, like jobs or appointments or something. So they're going to spend money, travel to another country to track this girl down. And then the guy's like, no, sorry, I'm her husband. I get to make this call. And they're like, oh, jolly good. And the story doesn't quite make there's parts of the story that don't quite make sense to me.
Well, I don't really know how long this whole you can't see Ellen went on for before they said, look, pal, we're going to see her, or we're going to rearrange your face or something. I really don't know.
Right.
But it could have been also that when they might have actually screwed up in the sense that maybe he went and got some French police to come along with him for the visit to the hotel. And that might be why he couldn't just like pull out his revolver and ventilate Edward G right on the spot. He had to have this discussion. That could have been.
You didn't want to escalate it that far. I wouldn't be above, you know, just giving a good strong donkey kick to the door and getting my way in there, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think
he checked the scene out.
Yeah. Well, I think he let him in the door, but it was just like basically sitting in the room.
Debating
the propriety and legality of the marriage, et cetera.
Eventually he broke down and admitted to the men that Ellen was a very fine girl and the heiress to one of the largest fortunes in the country.
That's what he said he had heard. And he decided he just had to have her.
Oh, that's a weird thing. That's a weird thing to admit.
Yeah.
So after a brief debate about the legality of the marriage, Wakefield finally allowed them to see his bride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe at this point he thought, well, after 5 days with me or 6 days with me or whatever it was, you know, she's probably head over heels with me. So yeah, maybe that's it.
You know, we've run across this like with Christiana Edmonds and stuff. Like, it's just so weird to me that nobody bothered to get Ellen's side of this weird story.
Eventually they did. You know.
Okay. I just love to know what's going through her mind this whole trip. Like, was she like? But anyway, so yeah. I guess he was so convinced he was such a Romeo that Ellen would want to stay with him. I guess that was like his plan. Unfortunately, he was set up to fail. He did not accomplish what he set out for.
No, he was due for a big disappointment because when Ellen's uncle explained to her that the story about her dad being on the run from creditors and being bankrupt and all this stuff was just BS. Ellen, of course, was hugely relieved to find out that, you know, they weren't poor. Her dad was not going to be arrested and thrown in debtor's prison and all that stuff. But also, of course, she was kind of furious that she had been lied to so comprehensively. And this is something that went on for days. This con went on for almost like about a week.
Yeah.
And if somebody had wasted a week of my time with a BS story like this, I'd want to kill him. She was mad, apparently. So she wanted to be taken home. Of course, Edward G. urged her to reconsider. He pointed out that he had been, quote, a gentleman to her, unquote, which I guess means that he hadn't insisted on having sex with her, even though they were married.
I guess. I would hope that maybe he met up. Anyway, he was kind of nice, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. But I suppose
in
you have to give
him to the not raping her thing.
Yeah, I suppose you have to give him that. Although, actually, yeah, not raping her is kind of like... You know, that's not exactly a creditable thing. We're all supposed to not rape people, right?
Yeah, we're also not supposed to kidnap girls from their schools. But apparently 15-year-old
girls, yeah.
Didn't catch the memo.
But despite this whole, you know, thing about, hey, haven't I been a gentleman to you? Ellen saw things a little differently and saying that he had deceived her, which, yeah, duh, and that she never wanted to see him again. And heartbreak, yeah. And the French police took her aside and gave her an interview too, and got her side of the story. And then they just let her uncle take her back to England with him, which, oh, thank God for that, right?
How could they do otherwise?
Oh, my God. But yeah.
You know, when I was reading your script for the first time, I was like, oh, man, is she going to stay with him? Oh, no.
I got it.
She's not all Stockholm syndrome now.
Yeah, but no.
So the situation was not going the way that Edward had imagined it would. He, I think, had figured out that he would yeah. would go the same way as his elopement with Eliza.
Yeah.
Even though I think the circumstances surrounding how him and Eliza came together were pretty different.
They were. I think there was actually some romance there, although.
Right.
Again, he might have been more interested in Eliza's wealth than in her good looks, but still. They at least knew each other before he eloped with her. That's that's kind of important, don't you think?
So I guess he was hoping maybe they, like we were saying earlier, they would try to avoid a scandal and just kind of accept him and then just like dump a pile of money on his head.
I guess, but this is like just that whole thing. You scratch your head and go, what was he thinking? I mean, really. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is a lot of tricks that he's put into this that he didn't do with his allies. When you make it too complicated, it's like building a house of cards or whatever, right? It's just going to come down on you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he didn't know that.
Hey, but so what happens next? Well, see, he actually was not taken into custody by the police, though. The Turners left. He wrote a letter to his brother William, who was still in England. He warned him that the jig was up. He also complained in the letter of the way the Turner family had treated him. Well, believe it or not, he said, quote, nothing could be more hostile than the whole spirit of the proceedings, unquote. Which seems like, well, of course it was hostile, you psycho.
I
mean, oh my God.
That's my daughter. I'd all I could do not to choke him out with my bare hands. But they were awfully rude about that kidnapping I pulled.
Geez. What's gotten into them?
He also said that he'd signed a solemn declaration that she and I have been as brother and sister.
Ooh, in other words, they hadn't done the deed.
Yeah, I guess that's what that I was trying to say. But he wasn't sure if the marriage was legally even solid. He told William to get out of Dodge, which is a funny term for England.
Yeah.
And he took off and went to Paris. So with this, what he's trying to say, Joe, right, is sometimes marriages are not legal if they have not been consummated. Right?
They can be. They're a lot easier to annul than
right.
Yeah. If there's been no sex, then you can annul the marriage. So, who knows? There might have actually been some sex. I mean, the family basically forced him to sign a statement saying that there had not been, so they would be easier to annul the marriage.
I get it. We're not, last podcast on the left or what. I got to just tell myself that as messed up as this whole thing is, he didn't rape her.
Let's hope. Yeah.
I'm just really going to hope. I'm just going to operate on that so I don't, feel sick to my stomach. It seems like maybe he didn't, right? Like,
I really honestly don't know, but I don't know.
Yes, he could have. Yeah,
I really, I really can't say. Hopefully not.
William Wakefield was arrested in England.
Oh, didn't quite get out in time, did he? Yeah.
No. He was supposed to get out of the proverbial Dodge, and he stayed there. Edward returned to face the music and put a nice politician-like spin on the story for the papers. He said, and this is a quote here, "I must stand by my wife. I would have made her love me."
Masterful shamelessness. You can see why this guy went into politics, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's putting some good spin on it there. I mean,
I guess, I don't know if I agree with you. Like, that last part of that, like, I would have made her love me. Like, you're saying the quiet part a little too loud there in the papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly. That's maybe he misspoke a little bit there. But again, at least have technical admiration for the shamelessness of it. I mean, he tricks this poor girl into marrying him, lies to her for a week just so he could get his hands on her family's money. And then he publicly declares himself to be the steadfast, loyal husband. I mean, can you imagine when they read that in the papers, what Ellen's family, I mean, can you imagine what that did to their blood pressure?
Oh,
I mean, I'd be stroking out. If I
I don't know
why Ellen's dad didn't shoot him. I don't know why.
Or worse. I'm sure they're right. Parents listen to this podcast. It's like, it's a really visceral thing when you put your own kid in that scenario.
Oh yeah.
I would have just lost my mind on the guy, especially. And there's something that my heart really goes out to the Turner family about, like, that this guy going around in the papers talking, like, it's one thing to say this guy did this and now he's in the papers like, well, actually I would have made her love me.
Yeah.
Read this stuff. My neighbor's got to read this stuff.
I'm sure that on top of everything else. Yeah. It was embarrassing. embarrassing for the family, because there are going to be people all across there are people all across England who are reading this about how that she was found in a hotel with Edward G. And there's people all around England who are debating the same thing we just did. It was, hey, did they do it or not?
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, and this is back in the, you know, the early 19th century. I mean, this is highly embarrassing for this family.
Yes, very scandalous.
Extremely so. Yeah. So, hey, but, you know, Edward and William Wakefield, they did pay some consequences. They were put on trial for conspiracy and abduction. And the trial began in March 1827. Also charged with them was Edward's valet, Edward Theveno, the guy who impersonated the Turner family's servant at the girls' school. Mm-hmm. And Dr. John Ainsworth escaped prosecution because, well, he never existed.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, so lucky for him. The Wakefields did bring forward some witnesses who testified that Ellen married Edward willingly and was even happy about it, thrilled about it. take advantage to clear my throat here. But these witnesses were laughed at. But these witnesses were laughed out of court.
All right. Well, that's good at least.
Yeah. The Wakefields were convicted. They were sent away to Newgate Prison. We've mentioned that Newgate before.
Yeah, it comes up a lot.
Yeah. I'm getting to know Newgate now. But they were sent away to Newgate for 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right.
I guess. I don't know. It seems kind of, considering that people got hanged for, you know,
for ruining clothes.
For ruining clothes, things like that. It's kind of surprising they got off that light.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, if it were my kid, I'd want them put away for a lot more than 3 years.
Yeah, I'd want them to be hanged. But
yeah. I don't want to just leave them alone in a room with me for a little while.
Yeah.
But Ellen's father, William Turner, petitioned the House of Lords to pass a bill to have the marriage annulled.
Yeah, I guess it was a little more complicated to get your marriage annulled back in those days than it is now. You got to go to freaking Parliament.
Yeah.
You
know? Right. Yeah, that is... Yeah, I wish I knew. I feel like I should know this because I know, like, it factors into the Tudor saga, right, with Henry and his wives, like, about how divorce and stuff worked in this period in English history. And I feel like I should know that, but this does seem hard. It seems harder to get your marriage annulled than it should have been at this point in English history. But I guess, I guess it took an act of Parliament.
Yeah.
Edward tried to contest, but let's face it, William Turner was one of the richest men in England.
Yeah, it probably gave him a little extra pull, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that probably helped. And King Edward was sort of a douchebag.
So
Parliament, they went ahead and annulled that marriage. But yeah, and as for Ellen Turner, she got married for real 2 years later at the age of 17, which is, you know, that's how it worked back then.
Yeah.
And alas, she died in childbirth just a few years after that, poor thing.
Marriage. I guess true love and marriage are not all they're cracked up to be, at least for her. Poor girl. That's really a shame. But
I feel bad for her.
Yeah.
So after the Wakefields got out of the good old hoosegow.
Yeah, the pen. Yeah. The Gray Bar Hotel.
They decided to move to the colonies. And in 1829, William became an agent for the New Zealand Land Company, which is best known for founding the city of Wellington.
Yeah, William founded Wellington, New Zealand.
Nice.
Yeah, so he goes from being like a petty con guy to a con man to being a founding father of world
capitalism do.
I know, it's awesome.
That, right?
Well, it was kind of a cool thing in those days. I mean, from the point of view of people like him, is that you could actually get a fresh start in life by going to the colonies. You know, even if you totally made a hash of things over here in the home country, you could go to the colonies and start all over and maybe do well.
I guess they did their time. Maybe they deserve to start over, but I'm sort of carrying a grudge. I think it's the dad in me. It's like, no.
Yeah. But then Edward Gibbon, also, he went on to great things, too. Like we mentioned before, he goes to South Australia and then New Zealand, and he became one of New Zealand's leading statesmen and is considered to be one of the chief founders of the country. And historical opinion of his career, Edward G's, that is, has shifted back and forth a bit. But at the height of the British Empire, many historians regarded him as kind of a national hero. They're kind of overlooking the abduction of Ellen Turner. They probably saw that as a youthful peccadillo, I suppose.
I'm not going to spare our listeners by cutting out the sound I just made. It's my brain frying in my skull. Yeah. So what did, okay, no, but seriously, this is your story. You researched it. What did people in New Zealand think about that? We're like, well,
I don't know, but I think that
did not know about it. Did it not cross the water?
I think that actually it was one of those things that perhaps it was felt just best not talked about. Maybe some of his fellow politicians felt like, you know, I could, you know, like sing this from the mountaintops, but then, you know, perhaps Edward might have a little dirt on me that he would tell everybody about too. Yeah. So let's just be gentlemen and not talk about this stuff. And maybe people felt that, you know, hey, if he did this, paid his debt to society and has moved on and been respectable ever since, let's just forget about it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like kind of a serious crime to just forget about. But again, these are the colonies and everybody gets a new start out in the colonies, right? Maybe that was it.
I mean, I guess.
Leave the past behind. I don't know. Of course, let's not forget, too, the internet didn't exist in those days. So it may well be that people just didn't hear about it.
That's true. Or only got his side of it or whatever.
Yeah.
So, all right. So what happened to Edward? What were his later days like? Did he find true love?
No.
Was he able to kidnap true love from a school?
No. There were no eligible kidnappees in Australia or New Zealand. He never remarried. Yeah. It's not that Australia and New Zealand were short on hotties, I don't think. But apparently the local hotties lacked that one essential romantic element, what the French would call je ne sais quoi, which is great familial wealth. And so he just didn't feel all that motivated to get remarried, I guess. I don't know. So he died in 1862 in Wellington, New Zealand. and as we mentioned earlier, he gets a substantial mention in the Dictionary of National Biography, and which gets only the kidnapping incident with Ellen Turner gets only a brief mention in that biography.
Which is weird. I mean, I'm sure we have our own modern sensibilities on this stuff, but like, can you imagine if you open up a biography of famous Oregonians and the passage on Tanya Harding was just mostly about skating and her landscaping business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One little thing about that time that her and her boyfriend got a competitor's kneecap. Like, that'd be really strange.
Oh, one last thing, one last note before we go. There is a book about this. If you want to get every last gory little detail about this abduction, there's a book called The Shrigley Abduction by Audrey Jones and Abby Ashby. And so you can get that book if you want to read more about it. And
cool.
Fascinating. Of course, we've told you all the good juicy parts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'll read the book. It's probably really good.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well, I think that gets us to the end of this joyful little tale of child abduction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as we wrap that one up, remember, if you happen to be in the Portland, Vancouver area, or I don't know, further away, and you just don't have a lot of time on your hands, come and hang out with us at CooperCon.
Absolutely.
Stories and theories about Cooper, and we may come home with a little bit of audio from that.
Yeah, we might just be putting something up next week.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. I think that's about it for the week. Just a reminder, please give us a rating and a review.
Oh, I know that's so desperate.
And I know for some of you, it's actually hard because of the apps that you use. And, you know, like iTunes, not everyone has iTunes. I don't use iTunes. And so some of the apps I use, I actually can't review the podcast that I really like. But if that's something you can do, please go out and do it.
Absolutely.
And there's other things you can do. You can like, there's like a like button on the Google podcast thing. You can hit that. That helps people. We're just trying to get more people to listen to the show, trying to expand our listener base. And so, you know, the big brother watches you every time you are, you know, listening to a podcast. And so they want to find people who are like you and turn them onto our cool show. And that allows us to build our community and grow the podcast. So please do it. It just takes a second.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. 100%. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's about it. So we'll be back next week, hopefully, possibly with an episode about D.B. Cooper, which I know you guys have been hungering for. And if we decide that, we'll give you something else. I don't know. But anyway, until next week. Toodaloo.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
And
hang on one second.
Okay. Yeah.
I just broke my headphones.
No.